This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Bob Wheaton, president of Deer Valley Ski Resort. Utah's fortunate to be home to 14 ski resorts, including three that have been ranked in the top 10 best ski resorts in all of North America by Ski Magazine. Between 2007 and 2011, Deer Valley was ranked number one. No other ski resort has held that honor for 5 years in a row. And Bob's been at the resort from the very beginning, starting in 1981 with Deer Valley's founder, Edgar Stern, and holding several positions along the way. Bob, thanks for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Well, good morning, Doug. How are you?
Doing well. Actually, we were talking just before the interview. As we sit in the studio recording this, Salt Lake City's experiencing its first snowstorm, so the timing is perfect for you.
Look kind of good to me.
Absolutely. Hey, Deer Valley's hashtag in social media is Ski the Difference, hashtag Ski the Difference.
Right.
As you think about what the Deer Valley difference is, what are some of the more important points?
I would like to think, Doug, that the single biggest thing is an extra special focus on our guest and the guest experience. And when we talk about guest experience at Deer Valley, it's pretty holistic. It's everything from someone anticipating their arrival until their conversation in the car or on the bus on the way back home, and everything in between. So it's not only about the great snow and the grooming and the food and the personal interaction with the staff. It's all of that wrapped together.
And I think people might be surprised by that answer, particularly the thinking about it ahead of time and the anticipation and maybe how the resort presents itself as folks are driving up for their vacation. What are two or three things that you can point to that say, here's how we help manage that expectation, that situation, and deliver on that promise?
Well, starting with the anticipation part, Doug, I would like to think that we have a pretty good, for instance, now, online presence. Certainly that wasn't there in 1981, but in 1981, I would like to think that we also had a pretty good presence on the phone, so that in the anticipation phase of a guest visit, we started out right from the get-go whomever the guest was talking to, that staff member would be able to handle the full gamut of their questions and their needs, everything from, you know, airfare to balloon rides to, you know, certainly all the stuff at the resort, you know, ski lessons, lift tickets, you know, restaurant reservations, all that kind of stuff, lodging.
Right. I need to disclose also, I actually am a part, you officially, for a handful of weekends every winter, are my boss's boss's boss somewhere along the way there. I'm a part-time ski instructor up there. I do it for fun. It's a great winter activity. I get to meet a lot of folks. And before I did that, though, the first time I went there as a guest, the thing that blew me away that was kind of like, wow, this place is special, was I had two young kids. There's a lot of skis you need to schlep. And you guys have the valets. People can come up, not valets for the car, but valets to get the skis to where they need to be and just help with all that equipment that needs to be moved.
That's correct. And that's a little different philosophy and a little different approach there, Doug. And as you well know, being on staff, a lot of opportunities come from staff members in an effort to provide the experience to the guest. And that one that you just pointed out is a prime example. When we first opened up in 1981, we didn't have that. We certainly had the unloading zone and the guest arrival and all that. But it didn't take too long. Like within a couple of weeks after we opened, the staff that was out there and at the ski corral and at the loading zone, they recognized that the guest had a need and that there's a lot of stuff to schlep, just as you said. I mean, you know, skiing is somewhat equipment cumbersome, if you will, a lot more than going to the beach with your Speedo. But as we were, watching guests arriving at the resort, it's like, God, these guys need some help. And so staff members just kind of jumped in at that point. And then before the end of the season, we had a full-blown department that would do that.
Yeah, and you know, I'll share with you that was one of the things that motivated me to be part of the team in the winter, was just to figure out, how does this organization, I mean, there's 1,000 plus people there at its peak, employees.
Actually, 2,800.
Is it 2,800? Wow. Yeah. And just as a business person myself, just looking at that and saying, how do they organizationally make it? So when I'm schlepping with my two kids across a flat area, that one of the Deer Valley employees comes up to me and says, can I help you with one of your kids? And just culturally, how do you get 28 people all heading in the right direction? And to me, it was fascinating. I thought I'd be there a season or two. I wanted to learn to be a better skier. I always thought it would be fun to work with kids and be a ski instructor. But as much as anything, it was really getting a chance to look under the hood and seeing how you guys do that. Can you talk about that? I've had a chance to experience it, but share with our audience, how do you get 2,800 people marching in the same direction and having that same commitment?
Communication, I think, is one of the biggest keys. And coupled with that, you know, we talk about guests a lot, and they aren't customers. They're guests. And there are a couple of flavors of guests, if you will. And I know, you know, being on staff, I know you know all this, but, you know, we talk about internal guests as well. Internal guests are fellow staff members. And those internal guests are individuals that are on staff, just like the rest of us, that need to have a service to do what they need to do for their guest. And so point in fact, as you said, you know, if you're trying to schlep a couple of kids across the flat, hopefully another staff member that's there and available can see what you're trying to accomplish and be there to assist. And so it's just that kind of philosophy, and it's a constant reinforcement. We, you know, we certainly go through a pretty substantial orientation, especially for new staff members. But then it's an ongoing deal, you know, every year or every day for years, years and years.
I mean, people will probably be surprised. I teach 15 to 20 days a year. And outside of that, I also get offered, you know, a lot of training. I take Deer Valley up on 5 or 6 days a year of training. But think about that as an expense ratio. 25% of my time when I'm wearing green is in training. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
And that's a big commitment that Deer Valley does to training. So I think it's a training. And it's also, you know, I entered a class. I think my ski instructor class was probably 30 or 40 people. In the first season, a couple people didn't make it because it's not for everybody. They're good people. It's just not a cultural match. And selecting the folks that are a match and the folks that aren't, I think, are a piece of it as well.
I think you're right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's go back to the beginning. You mentioned Edgar Stern. Obviously, he's the founder of Deer Valley. I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that Deer Valley was not his first ski resort. I believe it was Treasure Mountain back in the day, later became Park City. How did Edgar get interested in the ski industry?
Well, went to school for a while in Switzerland, and that's where he really got bitten by the ski bug. And his family, he was born and raised in New Orleans. His family was in the hospitality business, and Edgar followed suit. They were also in the retail business as well.
And, also owned one of the first television stations in the Southeast.
That's exactly
really
right.
Really early,
that's
like exactly 1950.
Right. Yep. You're well-versed, Doug.
I've been trained well.
There you go. There you go. And through that whole exposure to skiing and then being in the hospitality business, and Edgar's end of the hospitality business was in five-star hotels. And he started the Royal Orleans, the Orleans Sonesta, and then the most famous one that he started from a warehouse was Stanford Court Hotel in San Francisco. And all of these are, you know, five-star hotels. Edgar had the idea early on that, God, wouldn't it be great if we took that same philosophy from a five-star hotel and convert that into the ski industry? Because at that time, you know, you were doing really good if you got a warm cardboard hamburger versus a cold cardboard hamburger, which is most typical. And, you know, people would greet the guests instead of throwing snowballs at them and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was really the focus that Edgar had in the ski industry. And you're right. Edgar's first foray into ski area ownership was at Treasure Mountain, and then that got transformed into what we know today as Park City Mountain Resort.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Bob Wheaton, president of Deer Valley Ski Resort. So you were there pretty much from the beginning, and as you point out, and I like to do this with guests. We have a number of folks that have started their business 10, 20, 30 years ago, and go back to what it was like, in this case, 1981. Very risky, I would say, to commit to a ski resort and to provide that level of service and amenities. It's expensive to do that. Were ski resorts booming? Were they a really profitable business back then? I know it's a tough business today, but what was the business model like then?
It always has been a tough business, Doug, as you know. And it's a business that it can be a good business, but you cannot take your eye off the ball for 1 second. I mean, you take your eye off the ball and, things pass you by, opportunities pass you by, and all of a sudden the money goes the wrong way.
So I would argue committing that much capital into a business that's already as challenging to run as it was back today, it's obvious, right? That there is a niche for that and you can do well with that. But back then, it took a lot of vision and commitment to make that happen.
Definitely, and a lot of guts.
What did you think? I mean, you were there from the beginning. What did you think of the idea initially? Did you think, yeah, this is going to take off? Or, boy, were you thinking, I sure hope this works?
Well, my wife and I first moved to Utah 2 years before Deer Valley opened. And like you, we got into the ski industry through ski school. I was ski school director back in Michigan. Moved out to Utah, thought, God, you know, maybe someday I could be a ski school director, a destination ski area, and all that kind of stuff. So Mary and I both taught skiing at Park City Mountain Resort before Deer Valley was open. And we would look across the valley and, you know, we'd hear all these comments about, oh, yeah, that's that new Deer Valley deal over there. And, you know, those guys are going to go belly up before very long at all, because they're charging, my God, they're charging $19 for a lift ticket over there. And, you know, all this different focus and, you know, it's never going to make it. And I got a job offer at Deer Valley. I started there about 3 months before we opened. And it's been quite the ride.
And but were you in the ski school? Was that
no? Your well, first my position? First job offer was in ski school, ironically, I interviewed with Stein Erickson for the ski school director, and because I was a ski school director in Michigan, like I said, and I didn't get that job, and then I interviewed as a supervisor in the ski school, and I didn't get that job, but I did get a job offer as a ski instructor, but before we opened. I have a engineering degree, and my background was in buildings and restaurants and construction and all that kind of stuff. So the first job that I really worked at there was a building maintenance manager, and that was about 3 months before we opened, and that job was to transition from the construction effort in building the lodges and all the infrastructure for the ski area and transition that into the operation and set up all the maintenance programs for all the different systems and all that kind of stuff. So that's how I first met Edgar and his wife Polly. It was probably two and a half months. It was shortly after I started. And they came in, and we were going through the lodges, and I had the construction manager there, and that's the first time I met him. And I cannot tell you how impressed I was with their focus and their personal interaction. And I was a little intimidated because of, you know, Edgar's, not because of his personal reputation, but the things that he had done in the business world. And but boy, he was just down to earth and, you know, interested in my wife and I, and, you know, he's talking to the stonemasons and the carpenters and all that kind of stuff. And we had this, you know, the architect at the time was right there, and you know, I don't know how much that guy was charging, but it was a lot. But Edgar and Polly's focus was really more on the people getting the work done and the individuals that were providing the workmanship than the architects and all the high-dollar guys.
Yeah.
That really impressed me.
I had met Edgar as well and was happy I had a chance to do that. It is a similar experience. Just makes you feel very welcome. Takes a genuine interest in you. And I had met him wearing green as a ski instructor, and he was, you know, just interested in how my day was going, and a super nice guy.
Exactly.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more with Bob Wheaton, president of Deer Valley Ski Resort. Welcome back to The Bottom Line at KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Bob Wheaton, president of Deer Valley Ski Resort. So just before the break, you had mentioned you interviewed, back when you first joined Deer Valley, with Stein Erickson. And I know that's been a close relationship from day one. How did that relationship begin? And I actually don't know the history. Was the Stein Erickson Lodge, which is, I think, in its day was the only five-star ski resort lodging, was that there from day one, or did that come several years later?
It came the following year. And the relationship, Doug, started when I mentioned that Edgar grew up in New Orleans, and then he actually moved to Aspen. And Stein was based out of Aspen at the time. And he and Stein met, developed a very close friendship. And then when Edgar bought Treasure Mountain, he said, "Stein, I got this deal going on in Utah. You got to come out and help me, and I want you to be our director of skiing." And so Stein came out to Utah. And then the transition, Edgar owned and operated Park City for 7 or 8 years, and then sold Park City to Nick Badami, and then started on Deer Valley that same year. And so then Stein transitioned over to director of skiing at Deer Valley, and that's been 35 years ago.
I know we've only got another 5 or 10 minutes with you, so I'm going to transition to a couple other questions that I think our audience will be interested in. The Olympics were a pivotal moment for the state of Utah, really put us on the map globally for tourism. It was a boon, obviously, for the ski industry as well. Deer Valley was one of the host resorts. And there was a lot of prep that needed to take place to make the Olympics happen. And then just before the Olympics, 6 months before the Olympics, we had 9/11. And I wanted you to talk about, you know, how did that impact the planning and the amount of work and the preparation that it took to make sure that we put on a first-class event, but also that it was a safe environment for everybody?
It had quite the impact, Doug. And, you know, credit to Mitt Romney and Tom Walsh prior to Mitt, and Didi Corradini and all of those players at the time. The organization for SLOC was absolutely incredible. So the initial planning, even before 9/11, was very succinct. It was spot on. There was a lot of effort. And when 9/11 happened, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, you know, and there was a short period of time there on, are we still going to hold the Olympics? And that was a big decision, and it didn't take too long, and it's like, no, 9/11 is not going to affect the way that we live the rest of our lives, and we're not going to show the rest of the world that we're afraid about that. Having said that, the security end of the games was accelerated exponentially. So all of a sudden we saw aerial infrared heat-seeking technology. We saw secured airspace from Snow Basin to Park City. We saw there in Soldier Hollow. During the games we had guys in camouflage with M16s up in the trees kind of deal.
In fact,
most people couldn't see that.
One of those guys is a ski resort employee. He also was in the Army National Guard or the Reserve.
Yeah.
And he got called up just for that duty because he knew Deer Valley so well. And I was free skiing with him once, and he had this cool helmet, and I asked him where I could get one. He said, "You got to serve in the military. This was given to me by the Army."
So I
don't have one of those helmets. You know, I think another interesting story that folks may not know, and just because I'm there, and I think they'd find interesting, is Deer Valley was not always in the lodging business. 2008, 2009 happened the financial crisis. It was very difficult for many different businesses. I know there was a firm called Deer Valley Lodging that was basically licensing Deer Valley's name. How important, tell the story of how Deer Valley got into Deer Valley Lodging and how important of a piece of business is that to the corporation now?
Well, Doug, you hit the nail on the head about the recession and the market correction, or, you know, whatever kind of handle you want to hang on in 08, 09 time period. And there was a cash crunch in a lot of businesses. A lot of businesses were downsizing. A lot of businesses went out of business. And our licensee at the time, because Deer Valley Resort did license the name Deer Valley Lodging to a third-party company. They were a victim of the crunch. They went into bankruptcy. As a result of that, we one of the first things that we did was we pulled our name back and canceled the license. And then we had the decision of, okay, this is great. So now we have our name back. What are we going to do? We have a couple of choices. And at that time, Deer Valley Lodging at that time was not the only lodging business in Park City that went out of business. There was another one. Deer Valley Lodging at the time was the single biggest property management company. The second biggest one went out of business as well. And we thought, okay, so what are our options here? We have all of this inventory, great inventory, all around Park City and specifically in Deer Valley. So do we stand by and operate as we have, not being in the lodging business, being in the reservation business? Because as I said, in 1981, we were able to, when we got a call, we were able to book whatever that guest needed. And lodging was included in that. So we had the ability to book, but we did not operate. So then the decision was, do we let that inventory stand and let the market work through it? And recognizing that, we would probably see either a new or an existing lodging company outside of Utah come in and absorb that inventory, or do we jump in and form our own division, get into the lodging business,
making
beds and
clean
the toilets? Yes, very tough. And especially in that environment, because there were so many people that got burned. Homeowners that, you know, they were supposed to receive checks and they never got a check. So the temperature out there was a little chilly, let's say. So we made the decision to grab our own destiny and get into the lodging business. And so within about a 6 to 8 week period, we developed our own company, staffed it, organized it, integrated it into Deer Valley Resort, and here we are today.
You know, and just as the ski season was starting is when 2008 was really getting very, very scary, right? Bear Stearns was sold in March of 2008, but Lehman collapsed in September, and then as it is now, it's prep time, getting ready to go. And you guys hold a general meeting for all the ski instructors. In the year earlier, you had shared that there was going to be a raise for the ski instructors. And I remember the commitment that Deer Valley had. Not only did you not let anybody go, right? I mean, this was a part-time job for me. I was doing it for fun. But there were guys, this is what they do for their living, and they rely on it. not only did you keep the commitment to all the employees, but you honored that raise and said, hey, we're going to hold to that. We're still going to give you that. And I remember, as I think that was my first or my second year there, just being so impressed with the commitment that you had to the employees through that. So there are tough times, but through those tough times, I think, is when you really define who you are and what you stand for. And I applaud how you guys handled that. I think you did it really well. I think we need to let you go, but I do want to just ask a question about the future. A year ago, this time, Deer Valley bought Solitude. It's been a crazy, really, year and a half time period in the industry, specifically here in Utah. A lot has changed with Vail buying the operation rights to the Canyons and now PCMR and connecting them. As you look at the next 5, 7, 10 years for Deer Valley, what's the future look like?
I would like to think, and I've been accused of being an optimist in the past, but I would like to think that the future's extremely bright, Doug. And I know that's it's a moniker that a lot of people use, but it really is bright. We're so excited about Solitude. Spent a lot of time, a lot of money over there this summer. We're extremely excited about opening day November 21st over there. And have a new lift. We remodeled all the main restaurants over there, all three restaurants. We're up and going. We're ready to show the rest of the world what we can do in Big Cottonwood Canyon.
Excellent. Well, exciting times. We need to let you go. Bob, thanks for sharing your story and Deer Valley story with us this morning on The Bottom Line.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's my honor.
Our guest this morning has been Bob Wheaton, president of Deer Valley Ski Resort. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you, Ross. You can hear my entire interview with Bob on our website, kcpw.org. You can tweet me, nicely please, at Savvy Wells or at KCPW Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.